Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood and Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood and Magic, the podcast. In this episode, Selena and the Guardians have rescued Ophelia from a battle with the vampires. She has discovered a new magical power, but there are more surprises ahead of her. Chapter 7. We were victorious. The ride back to the monastery was full of discussion about the possibilities of my new power. Strangely, I wasn't part of it. Ophelia, a few of her trusted monks, Duncan and Chow, saw me as some sort of human vampire bomb. They had grand ideas about sending me into known vampire compounds and having me convince them to murder each other until I was the only one left standing. Devlin was more resistant to their annihilation scenarios. He focused on the need for practice, protection, and teamwork with the Guardians. No one seemed to be concerned that I had required vampire blood to spark my new abilities. They bantered back and forth trying to be right and solve all the problems of the Pox people. I'd had enough and I blurted out, "I want a picnic." They all froze and turned to look at me. Their looks of shock were almost comical. "Before dusk, while the sun is still out, I want a picnic by the river," I finished. Ophelia was the first to respond. "But why? We're deciding life and death matters here, and you want a little son? We've all sat here and talked about me as if I'm not even here. None of you have asked me what do I want, so now I'm telling you." I was a little more than frustrated. "Don't you want to defeat Marcus?" Duncan asked. "Of course I do, and hopefully we will. I just want to see some daylight. I'm not the vampire after all. Plus, aren't they all asleep during the day?" I asked. "Yes, they are," Devlin said. "I'll take you." Surprisingly, no one continued to argue, and the matter was settled. We were back at the monastery, it seemed, in less time than it took us to make it to Emerald Mountain. The monks had already begun repairing the damage made by the vampires and their bombs. There was a gaping hole next to the front gate where they must have streamed in on their way to the temple. Then there was the exit through the blast at the back of the temple. The working monks rejoiced in Ophelia's return, and she immediately went to the infirmary to console and bless the wounded. My initial plans to sleep in solitude were quickly dashed, as Duncan and a band of monks were dispatched to guard my quarters. Devlin insisted on taking a residence on the chase at the foot of my bed. I wanted to argue, but I knew it would be pointless. The rest of the night was uneventful. I turned over in the bed to see Devlin smiling at me. "Good day," he said quietly. I looked around the room, and it was indeed daytime. Sunlight poured through the open curtains, and the room was awash in white light. Excited, I bounded out of bed to get ready and saw the huge wicker picnic basket waiting on a table by the door. "I'll be ready in 20 minutes," I vowed, as I closed the restroom door behind me. I was out in 15, clad in navy blue shorts and a white t-shirt. Devlin was relaxed as well in jeans and a moss green shirt that made his eyes almost glow. He grabbed the picnic basket, and I lifted a soft cream and yellow blanket over my arm. Outside, our guards had been disbanded, and we walked on foot towards the river for our picnic. The sun was overhead like a radiant disk of light. A few clouds lazily floated through like fluffy cotton balls. Colorful birds soared through the air, lighting on the massive treetops of the surrounding jungle. I could hear the sounds of animals, especially monkeys, calling to one another. I took a deep breath of the air. It was warm and fresh with the light breeze. Devlin and I made our way down the path to the river, then we meandered off to find a grassy spot to settle and spread out our meal on the blanket. We talked about the most mundane things, such as how we grew up, where we were from, what we were like in college. I found out that he'd graduated a math major from an Ivy League university in Brazil. Shortly after that, his parents were killed in a freakish car accident. They'd both been decapitated. Chow contacted him and introduced him to the existence of vampires and that Devlin's parents had been their latest victim. Of course, he'd been skeptical at first about the existence of vampires. That was until Chow, along with some of the other members of the Guardians, took him on an expedition to save some locals that had been kidnapped. After that, with Chow's help, they went on their own investigative mission to discover the vampires that killed his parents and avenge them. Devlin left his teaching job and joined the Guardians full-time. Years later, there was the prophecy of Marcus and the One, and he came to the United States. I was sipping on lemonade when Devlin suddenly jumped up, with a mischievous glint in his eye. He stripped off his shirt and began unbuttoning his jeans. I almost choked. "What are you doing?" I gasped. "Having a little bit of fun, the sun, as they say," he laughed, and the jeans came off. He was down to nothing but pale blue boxers and beautiful bronze skin. My mouth started to water, and I blamed it on the lemonade. He turned away from me and ran and jumped into the river, cannonball style. "Come join me," he called after he sprang back up. I thought for a moment, when would I have free time like this again? I stood up, stripped down to my undies, and joined him in the river. We splashed around the cool water, scaring the fish before trying a game of Marco Polo. I closed my eyes and swam after Devlin as he called out Marco. He evaded me easily, but it was fun nevertheless. Then I realized I was calling Polo, but he wasn't responding. I opened my eyes and looked all around me, but he was nowhere in sight. Convinced he was playing another game with me, I dived under the water looking for signs of him. There was nothing. I came up and looked all about the clearing by the river, but there was nowhere for a grown man to hide. I dived under again and went all the way to the bottom of the river, searching for him. I came up again, and this time I had the eerie feeling of being watched. I scanned the riverbank in front of me and then spun around. In front of me was the biggest tiger I'd ever seen in my life, sitting on the picnic blanket. It was ferocious in its beauty. Black and orange stripes covered it from face to the tip of its tail. It was well over 6 feet in length, and its yellow eyes stared unblinking at me. I knew very well that tigers could swim, and at any moment it could jump in after me. It was sitting between me and the monastery. "Selena," I heard a whisper on the breeze. "Selena, follow me," the voice continued. The tiger stood and gave a mixture of a grunt and a growl. "Devlin is with us," I heard quietly in my ear. The tiger turned and began to walk towards the jungle, stopping several times to turn and look at me, as if beckoning me to follow. I swam to the bank and got out and put on my clothes. I found myself in a strange situation. Devlin was missing, and a tiger appeared to be talking to me. In a world of vampires, I had to think that perhaps there was other magic out there. I found myself following the tiger to the edge of the jungle. I stepped out of the sun and into the dimness of the jungle. The tiger waited for me a few yards ahead before continuing. I noticed the sounds of the jungle continued unlike when vampires were around. I followed deeper and deeper into the jungle. The tiger disappeared around the bough of an ancient tree, and when I rounded the tree to follow, I was confronted with a tall and well-muscled Indian man. He was dressed in a white sarong and had deep orange hair and black eyes. "Where is the tiger?" I asked. "I am the tiger," the man replied in a gravelly voice. I stared at him in awe. "You're the tiger?" I whispered to myself. It took a moment for all to digest. I thought of some sort of cheesy sci-fi movies I'd seen during winter break. Then I remembered Devlin had told me there were other beings in the world other than vampires. Some were our friends, and others were not. I clumsily blurted out, "So you must be a shapeshifter, were-tiger, or something like that?" "Yes, something like that," he replied, vaguely amused. "Where's Devlin?" I sobered immediately, remembering my reason for following this creature into the jungle. "He's right this way. Follow me, and I'll take you to him," he said as he beckoned with a long, taut arm. He proceeded deeper into the jungle in quiet, bare feet. He moved gracefully among the dappled light. After a time, I heard the sounds of activity up front. The jungle began to thin and was replaced by a settlement of people. It was an Indian village. People milled about outside their homes. Many appeared to be preparing midday meals around fires. It was a beautiful sight. Their hues ranged from dark chocolate to the lightest cinnamon. I could tell they were all were-tigers like my guide. Their hair was just as diverse as their skin tones, ranging from a deep rich orange to pale yellow blonde. Most of the people gave me curious glances. The children looked on wide-eyed and innocent. As I traveled deeper into the were-tiger settlement, the homes became larger and more solid. Fewer of the homes were made of seasonal materials but closer to brick and mortar. We arrived at a large home surrounded by massive trees. Their ancient boughs almost provided a natural fence. At the entrance were two burly were-tigers, wearing stern expressions and holding long spears. My guide murmured something to them, and they opened the heavy wooden doors and let us pass without incident.
"What is this place?" I asked wearily. "It is the Tiger Clan of Mahal and my home," the guide replied over his shoulder. "My father wants to meet with you." "And who is your father?" I demanded to know as we turned a corner into a short hall and another room. "I am King Bombax," replied a deep voice. In front sat a solid man swaddled in white robes at a very official-looking desk. The room itself looked like a cross between a study and a library. Books covered the walls. King Bombax stood as I approached. "I'm glad we finally get the chance to meet, Selena. I see you've met my son, Saju. We have much to discuss. Have a seat, please," he suggested. Saju sat in a comfortable leather chair to the right. I took the chair to the left. As soon as I sat, Bombax's demeanor changed. There was a charge in the air. He was no longer smiling. Guards appeared and blocked the room's only exit. "Now, Selena, can you tell me how my other son, Raja, died trying to warn you?" he demanded to know. I was stunned. "I don't know what you're talking about." Bombax pursed his lips and his eyes flashed ebony. Saju turned to me. "I do not smell a lie on her father," he hedged. Bombax raised his face slightly and sniffed the air. "You're right. I sent my son Raja to your Culpepper about a week ago. His mission was to watch over you and warn you about the vampire Marcus. The day after he arrived, we lost contact with him. Then we received word that he was found dead in your library." I realized the library creep must have been Raja. Aloud, I said, "Raja didn't approach me in the most helpful manner. He was actually very scary and violent. After he got into an argument with another volunteer, he disappeared and turned up dead in the bathroom. The police were investigating the murder before I ran into some trouble of my own." Bombax seemed genuinely confused. He raised a golden eyebrow. "Scary and violent? That doesn't sound like our Raja. We sent him on a peaceful mission. He was our most adept spy." "Perhaps Marcus got to him," Saju spoke up. "How soon after you met Raja did Marcus show up?" "I met them both on the same day. But what can Marcus do to a were-tiger to make him act that way?" I said, puzzled. "He has his own special brand of mind control," Bombax continued. "If he gets a were-tiger to drink his blood, he has temporary control over their actions." Saju stood up and began to pace the room. "The fact that he was still trying to warn you means he was fighting the effects. He was determined to be successful on this mission," Saju proclaimed. He punched a fist into his open hand. "Marcus is his murderer. No one else would have reason to kill him in that state. Marcus killed him when he realized he couldn't completely control him." Bombax growled. "We must have our revenge." "Let me do it, father." Saju stopped in front of Bombax's desk and braced his hands on the edge. Bombax was thoughtful for a moment. "I don't want to send my last son to his death. I can do this. I am strong. I can fight. I won't let those monsters get their poison into me." Saju turned to me. "Let me join you in this war and avenge my brother." I was puzzled. "Why are you involved in this battle? How do you know about me?" Bombax motioned for his son to sit and settle back into his chair. "We used to be slaves to the vampires thousands of years ago." He began a story that would reveal a world hidden from most humans. "We lived peaceful in remote parts of the world and clans. The vampires discovered us and began to slaughter us until they found a use for us. Almost by accident, they found they could control us through their blood. With this power, we became their day protectors and warriors from them. We are stronger than humans. As tigers, we could slaughter whole villages. After a time, our numbers began to recover, and we broke from the vampires. Now we fight for peace and refuse to be slaves ever again." Saju growled a vicious never. Bombax continued. "We know of the Pox people from our travels, and we consider them our friends. We have a few were-tigers live among them until they disbanded to prevent the prophecy and hide from Marcus." He took a deep breath. "We don't want to see Marcus rise to power and have vampires rule again. We knew he was searching for the one who would destroy him. We didn't know who that was until we discovered an ancient scroll in an ice cave in Siberia. The scroll has a drawing of the one, and she looks exactly like you." Bombax ducked down to reach into a drawer low on his desk. He pulled out a yellow roll of paper and presented it to me. He unrolled it as he stood and leaned over the desk. I couldn't read the hieroglyphics, but in the center of the text, there was indeed a rough drawing of a woman resembling me. The facial structure and the hair were the same, except the eyes were full of gold stars. I gasped at the resemblance. Baumbach continued, when we lost contact with Raja, we didn't know what happened or where you disappeared to. We have friends at Ophelia's temple who told us about your arrival. We were happy to know that you were safe at the moment, but I needed to have answers about Raja, Baumbach continued. Let me join you, Sajid persisted. I thought for a moment we could use all the help we could get. The were-tigers had defeated vampires before. Having another warrior among us would only help, but could I risk bringing one that could be mind-controlled? I decided I would take the chance. Yes, I breathed, join us. Sajid gave his father a fierce smile and stood to walk around the desk and embrace him in a tight bear hug. I will avenge Raja, father. After this, Baumbach said with some emotion, you will come back to us. Promise me this. I promise, Sajid said with courage as he turned to me. Come, I will take you to Devlin, he declared. I stood quickly and he led me through the guards out of the library. We traveled down the hall to another room. This one was protected by three guards, even more savage looking than the first two. They parted with firm words from Saja, who unlocked and unbarred the door. He entered cautiously. I followed behind him. The room was a disaster. Chairs and tables had been unreturned. The modest bed was flipped and the linen torn. In an instant, Devlin came from behind the door and grabbed Sanju around the neck in a bone-crushing grip. Just as quickly, Saju's right hand transformed into a lethal tiger claw and gripped his arm, ready to tear it from the socket. Devlin, he's a friend, I yelled. He's going to help us fight Marcus. I finished in a rush. Friends, don't kidnap each other and lock them up in rooms, Devlin said through gritted teeth. There was a moment of irony. Well, that's exactly what you did to me, I quipped. He spared a glance at me and reddened. Saju was reddening from a much different reason. His claws dug into Devlin's shoulder and began to slowly dig and tear his flesh. Let him go. He needs to let me go, Devlin countered. We're all leaving together. You need to let each other go, I huffed. We didn't need a stubborn show of testosterone. Okay, boys, on the count of three, you both need to relax. One, two, three. They released each other. Saju took some deep breaths and Devlin fingered his shoulder. They eyed each other with the promise of a rematch later. Why exactly are we leaving together? Devlin gritted out. Saju, I need a moment to talk to Devlin alone. As you wish, he said, as he backed out of the room wearily and closed the door. I shared with Devlin what I'd learned from the father and son. He was instantly suspicious of the methods of persuasion, but finally did admit we needed as many fighters on our side that we could get. After we deal with Marcus, he does not stay, Devlin conceded. Deal. This is just a mission for him. He's not leaving home for good, I promised. After we came to the agreement, we rejoined Saju. He packed a bag, said his goodbyes, then he was leading us back through the village and jungle. At the river, Devlin gathered his clothes. I got the picnic supplies and we were back on our way to the temple. I mused over the afternoon. It hadn't turned out to be as carefree and fun as I wanted it to be. However, we did have more weapons in our arsenal against Marcus. I just hoped I wouldn't find myself regretting the deal that I made. Thank you for listening. Come back, same time, same place, next week for more of Blood Magic, the podcast.